the Mysterious Universe, Season 29, Episode 23. Coming up on the show, we've got the flaming plasma fields, weaponizing the paranormal, and legend tripping with Ong's hat. I'm Benjamin Grundy. Joining me is Aaron Wright.
Oh, good old Ong's hat. Wasn't that some kind of, I don't know, transportation device, teleportation item?
It's a bit before our time. It's this conspiracy that emerged in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 1990, this pamphlet appeared, and it was this very obscure conspiracy about two physicists that were operating secretly in Pine Barrens, New Jersey.
The one. Yes.
Out in the forest, they had some installation where they were working on esoteric science, and they had paired up with some ashram, and they were doing like remote viewing, quantum physics. And this weird pamphlet that showed up described how they created this machine called the Egg. And the Egg allowed them to travel to alternate dimensions.
Yes.
So parallel Earths, mm-hmm. for example. And this just, essentially this came about as, you could argue it's the first internet conspiracy.
Well, it became an urban legend, really. But you're right, it did spread across the internet. That's how it really took root.
It became this huge thing. It got a life of its own. And it's tied into this idea of legend tripping. And of course, legend tripping is where you go to a location. This is the surface explanation. You might go to a location where there's a legend associated with it. That's one side of it. But the other side of it is kind of using your will. You're almost trying to make the legend come alive again.
Mm.
And this story of Ong's hat, which ultimately many of you may know if you're familiar with it, it was a very elaborate art project, really. This guy created it. He spun this whole universe of weirdness out of this story.
But even that is highly controversial now. There's a lot of people that still like so wholly believe that it was real, that even when he came out and said it was an art project, the people are like, no, it's not an art project.
Well, I want to tell the history of this and tie it in with this idea of fiction taking on a life of its own.
Mm.
And when stories become more than just stories, they become almost sentient in a way. And this happened with the story of Ong's hat. As you mentioned, the creator, when he came out and said, well, I'm done. This was all great fun, but we're done here. Please leave me alone. People didn't believe him that it was actually finished. Mm. You know, people were showing up to his house asking to see the egg device. And the conspiracy had all these crazy stories that the military came in and stole the equipment. There was some kind of nuclear facility accident nearby. And a lot of the stories that got woven in quite brilliantly by this creator, Matheny, his name was, they were linked to real stories.
Yes.
So people
that were built upon the truth behind the story.
People that were researching it would look up this thing to do with a nuclear accident, and they'd find that in New Jersey there was a nuclear accident that had been covered up by the authorities for years, and the timing just happened to coincide with this conspiracy theory that these two scientists from Princeton had used the egg device to go to a parallel Earth where there was no humans, where they could live free without military involvement. And all of this kind of, like I said, it built up a life of its own. And I'm going to take that concept and look at some more examples of that. So I think Art Bell and his program, there's a lot of great examples where legends started to take on a life of their own and the fiction started to manifest in the real world. And there's also modern examples from the last few years as well that tie in nicely. And I think you could argue that aspects of the UFO phenomenon
Absolutely.
Are exactly this, where fiction starts to manifest. It starts to become real.
Oh.
Even to the creators who know that it's fiction, it starts to force itself into their everyday life.
Well, a great example of that from recent times is the Slender Man mystery. I mean, we know that this was a made-up story. Like, everyone knows that Slender Man is a made-up story. And yet, even recently, I've seen reports of people, you know, that apparently have not been interested in paranormal topics or not interested in creepypasta or any of this kind of stuff, report that I've encountered tall, slender-like entities in forest regions and areas, and they're terrified by them. So it's an example of where it's almost like a toolpic kind of idea where enough energy is given into this thing that it manifests in our reality and people start experiencing it.
It's like an egregore.
Absolutely.
The idea takes on sentience and it starts to enforce itself on the material world. It starts to make its presence known. Well, stories become real.
That's right. That may be the theme of what I've got coming up in this episode as well. Of course, you know, there's been a huge amount of furore and discussion and excitement surrounding the recent whistleblowings about UFO activity, what the US government knows, clandestine organizations hidden in the background, the wet noodle that is the AAPRO, and these other, you know, groups that are essentially trying to cover up the truth behind the UFO phenomenon. Well, it just so happens that Stephen Greer on the 12th of June had a National Press Club event. It's over 3 hours long on the Plus Show.
Oh, good.
I did sit through it for 3 hours.
I still haven't watched it.
I will save the best parts for the show so you don't have to sit through it. Because, I mean, look, everyone...
Was it any good?
Look, it actually was. It was intriguing. I mean, if you go in there with an open mind, you also go in there knowing that, you know, Greer has a certain agenda that he's going with. He hasn't wavered from that agenda. And that is that all extraterrestrials are good and, you know, like there's nothing wrong with them. It's these other groups we have to be worried about. That was a kind of reoccurring theme.
It's the humans that are bad.
It's the humans that are bad. I also noticed something that was a little bit odd. And I, like, on the Plus Show, we were playing some audio of Michael Herrera. And Michael Herrera is another whistleblower who has come forward. Strangely enough, though, his story has a lot of parallels to another Greer whistleblower, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's lying. I just thought something interesting about that. I hadn't seen this press club image. I only read the article where he was describing that he had been deployed into the jungle and he saw a UFO come down associated with this clandestine group. Go back and listen to that show, or have a link to it in the show notes so you can check out the story itself. But I noticed that in the press club, and I finally saw him, he's wearing not only a Mason pin on his tie, which may not mean anything, he's also wearing an Agenda 2030 climate action pin, which is a WEF-associated initiative. And I'm like, two groups that are already heavily associated with conspiracy theories, and you're getting up claiming that you saw a UFO?
Maybe so what? Just, he's a Mason. Big deal.
Maybe it's just poor judgment, and perhaps
he's a member of the World Economic Forum. Big deal.
Oh, yeah. You know, those guys that lecture us about climate change and yet fly around in private jets all the time. You know, yeah, just those guys.
Most people believe in that. Most people believe in climate change.
The thing is, you've got Greer there. You know, Greer saying, well, and I agree with him, though. He actually is right on this, is that if these technologies do exist, and that's why, you know, the theme for the show is weaponizing the paranormal, because these technologies, if they are real, if they are true, they are extraordinary, and they will be a silver bullet for a lot of the problems that humanity has. And he keeps on going through this idea that if we can develop these technologies, if we can put funding to the enhancement of these technologies, we bring it out into the open, he will eliminate poverty and, you know, climate problems and energy problems. All of that will be eliminated if the truth is revealed. And I'm just like, this feels very space commie-esque, like, going on here. I mean, maybe he's right. I mean, maybe it will usher in, you know, a utopian era of, you know, post-scarcity. I'm like, I'm just not buying that. But look, regardless, I still think he brings a lot to this field, and there's a lot that people, you know, should be aware of the stories that are out there. So I want to play you actually just a few stories of other whistleblowers that appeared. One of them is this outlying story. And there are a lot of stories out there about strange things that are going on down at the South Pole. You know, there's always been these stories.
Yeah, this has been the very forefront of really ridiculous internet conspiracy theories.
Oh, like, absolutely. Hasn't it?
Like David Wilcock style.
Yes.
Retardation.
Yeah, but it started as early as, you know, the 1960s, where there was rumors that popped up that the Nazis escaped to Antarctica and built a base down there.
But it's really been Corey Good and David Wilcock pushing this honestly just nonsense coming out of Antarctica with no proof at all. Just really obvious bad images and... It really grinds me.
And I can see the look in your face. You're passionate about it. Well, I also saw, like, it's been picked up by the flat earthers as well. You know, they claim that Antarctica is actually a wall of ice, so that's why we have to stay away. No, it's an inhospitable environment for most people, and it's obviously a very difficult place to get to. That's why we're not going down there. However, in saying that, there may be something to some of this, which isn't as exotic as there being, you know, a massive space hangar there holding all these craft.
They're saying there's like underground cities and there's hangars with, you know,
massive crop
remains of aliens. It's just there's no limit to what they're saying. Oh, yeah, in Antarctica.
All that, you know,
because no one can go down there and check it.
Exactly. All that, you know, somehow the American military back in the 1940s, you know, we know that old story that they made an agreement with the Greys. Well, part of that agreement was that they would build a base down there for them as well. So all the Greys hang, it's like a cantina bar down there now. Yeah, that's where they that's where they come. That's where any extraterrestrial that comes to Earth, they go and hang out in this facility in Antarctica.
The last time we spoke about it, weren't they talking about there being a portal? Or was it Stephen and Evan Strong were talking about a portal?
Was that the CEO portal?
All the world's CEOs are going to be rounded up and pushed through this portal in Antarctica that sends them to another dimension.
Wasn't that supposed to happen a few months ago?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, maybe the time's been delayed.
Well, the CEOs have been quiet.
Well, they have been. But there is this one, this is the thing about all these sorts of stories, right, is that as much as some of them seem to be really outrageous, I will give credit to Greer that he's pulled a lot of people in that have stories that are still outrageous, but they could be plausible. Like there's some, you know, plausible stuff going on.
And isn't the argument that the people telling the crazy stories have credentials, they have,
yep, they have trustworthy credentials.
People.
They're in the military, you know, they've seen their documentation, you know, they're apparently, some of these people though make claims, which is possibly true, that they're given false papers for certain orders that they have to go on. I think it's called MOS stuff as well, you know, for what their positions were and their roles were. Some of that is forged, but still, you know, they do have a military record. So, you know, maybe they are telling the truth. But one guy just so happens to be a Raytheon contractor. And look, what Stephen Greer makes abundantly clear is that the biggest danger that exists is
current or former?
Former Raytheon contractor. Look, the biggest threat that exists to humanity is not extraterrestrials. It's the military-industrial complex. And essentially what has happened is that the military-industrial complex itself has become a breakaway civilization. They started reverse engineering these technologies. They're still within the bounds of the United States government at some level, but essentially they have no oversight at all. And it's spread out into the corporate world, and the corporate world at the upper echelons have access to all this incredible technology. And apparently Raytheon is the developer of strange space weapons platforms. I'll go into it with Eric.
Of course they would be.
Well, when I say, but highly strange space weapons platforms with technologies that aren't supposed to exist. That's the biggest argument.
Isn't that the whole point of having cutting edge,
of course it
you
is.
Know, yeah, aerospace exactly. weapons research?
Of course it is. So where we head down into the South Pole is the Ice Cube Neutrino Observatory. And I note observatory, right? Because it's just
simply, a place called the Ice Cube Neutrino?
Yeah, it's called Neutrino Observatory. This is a neutrino observatory, obviously, which was constructed at the South Pole.
Is that where they keep the sex slaves?
I don't know about that.
Corey Good's sex slaves.
That's not, no, none of that. Essentially, this is a project which is linked in with CERN experimentation. And the idea is that there's thousands of sensors that are located under the Antarctic ice that detect neutrinos. And all very above board, all very advanced particle physics.
Yeah.
You know, but nothing to be concerned about at all. You know, nothing. Well, according to Eric Hecker, he was sent down there in 2010. Let me just play some audio of him describing what his role was and what he found out.
In 2010, I was selected to go down to the South Pole Station in Antarctica for an entire year by Raytheon Polar Services as an employee of a third-party contractor for the National Science Foundation. I function in a dual-role capacity as a tradesman and a firefighter. My responsibilities required me to be more informed than most of my crew and offered me complete access to the facilities. The technology at the South Pole Station certainly can do what it is presented as its primary purposes, and unfortunately, much more. The Ice Cube Neutrino Detector is presented as a passive listening device for the purposes of the science as presented. But I'm going to skip right through the chase, folks. I have provided documentation that proves that the 5,160, what they call DOMs, that are embedded in the ice can actually transmit at 2,047 volts each. That gives us a long list of things to consider. It is effectively a multifaceted directed energy weapons platform.
Cool.
So he has this.
This is way cooler than UFOs.
He has this depiction as well of what it looks like. And I don't know how real this is, but this is the image that he puts up. It's a drawing showing what essentially looks like a cord of balls, like these balls all on a chain. And they all go down deep into the ice. And there's just multitudes of them. And each and every single one of them is somehow powered, as he points out there, mm-hmm. to be be used as both a detector and an emitter of energy or some type of force that they're able to manipulate. So yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool that it's an energy weapons platform. You know, what are they using it for? Well, it's not just a weapons platform. Apparently tying in with the other conspiracy theories about the incoming and departure of UAPs, they have to be monitored and they all give off neutrinos. So this South Pole base performs a very important task.
These off-world craft, on-world craft, ours or other nations, are also emitting neutrinos. So this makes the South Pole station effectively an air traffic control station for this new level of equipment that nobody's discussing. In addition to the ability to detect neutrinos and the exotic vehicles, I have provided documentation that shows that this is also a system for faster than light communications. In the past, Gary McKinnon has hacked NASA, found the off-world fleet, the list of captains, and it's apparent that if we have faster than light vehicles moving throughout the system, we're going to need faster than light communications. This is that facility.
Gary Gathers back.
That's the name of the guy that I couldn't remember. I was like, who was the guy that hacked NASA? It was Gary McKinnon. And if you recall his story, if you're not familiar with it, he apparently hacked into NASA with, what, a 56K modem, a 28, maybe it was a 28K modem.
Took him an hour to download this grayscale image.
But he also got a list of off-world, I think there was like a list, and it was called off-world, it wasn't pilots, but it was off-world something, off-world officers, something like that.
Yeah, and they were stationed aboard military Navy vessels, but the vessels weren't part of the fleet the US currently has. And so the suggestion was that they were fleet outside of the Earth. It was a space fleet.
And this fits in with the theme of what Stephen Greer was describing. He was saying that many of these craft that we witness and that we see are actually our craft. They're human craft, but they're ARVs. They're alien or advanced reproduction vehicles. This is what these things are. And this is why some of them crash. This is why some of them, you know, seemingly have, you know, streaks of flames coming at the back of them, because we don't entirely know how to reproduce these things correctly. We make mistakes with them. And some of the ones that have been, and some of these stories that have come through about these reproduction vehicles, don't get me wrong, they are extremely advanced, but you can tell the difference between an ARV and a one that was created by an extraterrestrial.
Okay. Yeah, I like how Grush comes out, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago, and we had other whistleblowers come forward anonymously to back up his claims, and some of those people had testified to Congress, and they're claiming that we can't reverse engineer this stuff. Their information was that, look, I don't know for sure, but I haven't seen anything that suggests we understand it, that the military's been able to produce their own versions of this technology. We just can't figure it out. And along comes Stephen Greer, who just goes full schizo with his eyewitnesses. Like, no, we've got secret space programs, fleets out there, we've got energy weapons.
Ben, it gets better. You've got no idea what's coming next. Like, this is just wild. I mean, and this is why I like, though, even though it was 3 hours, I sat through it for 3 hours because I'm just like, it's wild stuff. It's the upper echelons. It's the upper limits, really.
It's full schizo.
It's full schizo. Yeah, you're totally right. So the thing is about this, so there's apparently this Raytheon defense contractor, part of the military industrial complex facility, which is down in the South Pole. It's doing all these weird kind of things. But the problem is, much like the alien reproduction vehicles, we're not perfect with it. We can't always get it right. Now, unfortunately, sometimes there can be devastating consequences for not aligning it or the targeting sensors correctly.
The season that I was there, 2010 to 2011, we converted from construction to operations and maintenance in both the elevated station and the detector array. Unfortunately, when they first fired it up, that was when we had the earthquakes in Christchurch, New Zealand. It was two incidental shots before they were able to target it correctly. This is an earthquake-generating device as well. This is the weapons of war that we have to deal with now and what Raytheon's hiding.
What?
Yeah.
Whoops. Sorry, New Zealand.
So Raytheon can deploy an earthquake, a devastating earthquake, to essentially anywhere in the earth. And what is crazy about this, though, what is crazy is I have family members in the military. And they have told me that in Australia, there has been testing of bouncing certain frequencies off the ionosphere, which was, you know, posited as being for communications. But apparently there have been side effects as a result of that, suggesting, and they didn't say this directly, but I inferred it being that it was also causing earthquakes.
Oh, that's what led to the discovery.
Yeah. So that, and this is taking decades, you know, for it to get there. And so this isn't reverse engineering of alien technology in this aspect. It's just highly, highly cutting edge advanced technology.
Right. Well, I guess the question is, what does any of this have to do with UFOs?
Nothing really, apart from the air traffic control stuff. Like what Greer, the whole point of what Greer is trying to do is he's trying to point out how dangerous the military industrial complex is. And, you know, they know this information. They've got this stuff. And this
I want them to have this stuff. To shoot the aliens. I want them to blast them out of the sky.
That's the very next piece of audio I'm going to play for you, right? Because the other thing that Eric Hecker describes is that one day he walks out and he sees a giant laser beam fired into the sky.
The Atmospheric Research Observatory in what we call the clean air sector. I witnessed myself a very powerful green laser shooting out of the top of this facility into the cosmos. This, I believe, is a secondary form of long-range communications and or a defense system. I am not saying that we need to be scared of anything that's out there, but please understand, the military-industrial complex is happy to invest all of your money in alleviating their fears.
So he saw a green laser.
Green laser. So he suggests that it is either, or could be both, a communications, faster-than-light communications technology or some type of defensive weaponry.
Wasn't this in the news fairly recently, like 3 months ago, with some kind of green laser?
Yes.
And it was initially thought to be a Chinese satellite.
Yes, yes.
And it was a Chinese satellite.
Yes, there's something.
So it wasn't a Chinese satellite. It was secret US military technology.
This is the thing. Look, I do not doubt for a moment that there is advanced weapons testing going on. And Antarctica would make sense. Like, this is a place where you would want to do it. But he says something very poignant there. Is that, you know, the military-industrial complex is more than happy to spend your money to alleviate their fears. Now, what those fears are, I don't know. I mean, is their fears their stock price going down? Is their fear, do the military-industrial complex really do have, you know, our best of intentions, which is protecting us from, you know, foes? You know, if they, are they at war with extraterrestrials and we don't even know it? Is that what's going on? Or does it just come down to they're a group of people that have just, you know, got such advanced technology that they've just stepped away. Their ethics are out the window and they just keep on doing whatever they want to do to make money. And that's it. I mean, Herrera, who I was pointing at before, I think he made allegations that the way that these groups get funding is through drug trafficking. Well, that's why that UFO landed, is because they were loading drugs or something onto it to be able to move them around the world.
I love that.
I'm like, well,
I love
that. That makes sense.
First of all, yeah, I mean, the CIA dealing drugs and, the, you know, laundering money and all that sort of stuff. But the idea that you're using a UFO to move, like, just tons of cocaine around the world at rapid speed.
Imagine that's if it amazing. Crashes like a white sheen.
Like, yeah, some narco comes out in Mexico into his ranch and there's this UFO landing. The truck backs up, gets the cocaine off.
Think about it, though. If you did have that technology, I mean, how else would you smuggle drugs? You wouldn't use the standard shipping lanes. You got a UFO.
Just teleport the drugs. Well, why would you even use a UFO?
Good point. Because those advanced technologies, these sci-fi technologies, actually come up later on, as described by Dr. Stephen Greer. He has, and I just want to play a few short pieces of audio of what he was describing, because he said, look, there's a wealth of witnesses that want to come forward to want to describe, you know, what they've seen, what they know. They have presented this information to Congress or to, you know, the other powers that be, but they've been threatened. They've been threatened. It's not just their own lives. Their family lives have been threatened. Their pensions have been threatened. Some of these people have signed, for example, 80-year NDAs, which is kind of pointless because if you're 40 when you sign one of these things, you're probably unlikely to get to 120. So these are lifelong NDAs. But with these advanced reproduction vehicles, from it we've developed, you know, certain technologies. And somehow we've developed technologies that allow us to have a greater edge on the battlefield with terrestrial and traditional craft.
This is just an indication of a type of electromagnetic system that actually can cloak any tank or any object that we've developed over the years, and he was read into this as well.
So this is one of the witnesses describing to him that we have cloaking technology which can be deployed from the air to envelop some type of tank or battalion or something. This is the technology that we now have. Another thing that he claims is that we have very advanced electromagnetic stasis technologies and teleportation or transporter technologies. Listen to this.
So there were helicopters. He was on the team to pick up debris. This one was, of course, intact. It began to pulse and operate and came back to life, as it were. And the entire group that was there basically were put in some kind of a stasis electromagnetically. Sounds like science fiction. Teleported back to the helipad.
What?
Instantly.
What?
Yeah.
What's he talking about? Is he talking about technology that we have, or this is like some kind of UFO retrieval?
This is technology that we have. So he's suggesting that another whistleblower was telling him about what happened when they were trying to retrieve something from a site. Again, the same theme of these people being deployed to these locations, but they're already being, or soon afterwards arriving, this clandestine group that gets those people out of the way. And this is why they deploy these technologies. But that electromagnetic stasis field, also known as a plasma field, it's described there sometimes, comes up in numerous other cases. And what is odd about it, it's not just this particular presentation where that comes up. I did some digging today, and I'm going to describe some stories for you in a moment of where it seems like there are people that have had multiple like UFO encounters, multiple reports of people encountering UFOs and encountering this particular field, like this static field. Before I get into that, though, I will point out that, look, Greer, as I said before, is saying there are no hostile ETs. There's been people that have, you know, come to him and blown the whistle and said that they've actually met with these good ETs, and they're always stunningly hot. Like, I don't know why this keeps on happening, but he shows this particular slide of two of these, you know, tall, 7 foot tall, sexy aliens that always show up.
Have you got that slide?
No, I don't have that slide.
Why not? Why don't you have the slide?
It's always the Nordics, right?
Oh, I'm just sitting here looking through the whole 3-hour presentation trying to find it.
It's a male and a female, so there's something for everyone. And it's just like, really? You've got these sexy aliens telling you that, oh, you don't have to worry? Well, one of these guys, one of these whistleblowers, is like, I'm out. He's like, he met these sexy aliens. He was over-sexified. He can't handle it anymore. He's like, I'm leaving the program. Well, it just so happens that once you're in, it's like the mafia. You're never getting out. There's no way that you can. And he tried to get out. So when he tried to get out, a fake alien tried to abduct him.
Later, he had an event when he tried to leave that command where there was a fake, what's called a program life form, alien. These have been used in what you hear in the fabled lore of abductions and stuff in the UFO lore. This is actually a man-made creature, but it's not living per se. It has a covering that's skin-like. It tried to take him one of these ARVs in command, and some people camouflaged in the ground near his truck after he got out of this command. He was disgusted with what was happening. He no longer wanted to be part of that project, but they weren't happy he left. I told him, it's a miracle that you live to tell this tale. And so what happened is that his pickup truck went into sort of complete lock, motor died, because of this man-made UFO, UAP. He opened the door because he saw this creature, which he thought was an alien, it's not, and he hit it, it fell, he kicked it, and it split open this outer, and he saw the integrated circuits and fiber optics and what have you. This man I've dealt with quite a bit. He was ready to come to the Aero skiff. He had a nasty encounter with people who threatened him directly. This is recent. And so we have not been able to bring him to the Aero Pentagon briefing.
I love that he saw an alien.
A gray.
And literally kicked its face off.
That's exactly what he did.
And it's like full of wires and stuff. How much would that cost? Like a state-of-the-art fighter jet is what, $1 billion?
Easily,
what
yeah.
is a state-of-the-art black ops
Billions.
Biological alien machine?
Billions. And so I begin to wonder, like, we talk about money laundering and what's going on.
Yeah, that's a lot of cocaine.
Well, is it cocaine? I mean, look what's going on in Ukraine. You know, like, it's a lot of allegations of money laundering going on there. What if it's not about just, you know, stuffing people's pockets? What if it's about getting the money into these programs? So you can have more. And he actually shows an image. It's a sketch, but a drawing of this gray essentially that has had its face kicked off. And there's all these wires hanging at its side, its skin's parted. And it's horrible because they use this ARV to fake an abduction to
What's
get
an
this
ARV?
Guy. This is the alien reproduction vehicle.
Right.
So it's horrible. Like, it's really a horrible. If any of this is true, obviously, yeah, once you have this knowledge, it's like once you're awake, you're not going back to sleep again. You can't get out of this. And as Greer pointed out there, like this guy has not come forward because he was going to come forward, but he was threatened.
So my questions would be, why haven't any of these guys testified to the AARO? Have they done that? Have they testified to Congress?
I believe some of them have.
Okay.
Yes, some of them have testified to Congress and have put forward documentation that apparently or allegedly, you know, supports their positions.
And how come they didn't go to, say, Leslie Kane and Blumenthal for their reporting? I mean, why do they have to go through Stephen Greer?
That's a very good question. I do not know. I do not know the answer to that. And I think, look, this is quite sad. The next piece of audio I want to play for you is important because it does set the scene for what I want to describe to you later in the show. However, this guy, so his name's Steve Digner Jr. And the poor guy has suffered from a brain injury. Like he's operating at 0.5 fetimens essentially.
And 0.5 fetimens.
Like he's there, but he's unfortunately he was working on a weapons range. And I don't know if this happened at Fort Irwin, the particular encounter he's describing, which I'll play the audio for you, that happened just outside Fort Irwin in California, but he was working on a weapons range and it was a live fire range. And apparently there was this bunker there. And at some point, he doesn't go into the detail, but at some point he was blown up. Something happened. I don't know if he wandered out into the range and it blew up. But there's this really cringe moment that kind of sets... I just feel like... I don't want to speak so badly of him because, as I said, he has a brain injury. But he's there. He's telling the story. And in the middle of the story, out of nowhere, he goes, "Oh, well, my general used to be, you know, General such and such, but my new general is Stephen Greer." And all these people are like, "Oh!" I'm just like, are you kidding me? Like, he's not.
You're getting cult vibes.
It's very cultish. He's not a general. I mean, he's not a leader. It is good if he's trying to bring these stories to the surface. But to start making it this kind of cultish vibe, I'm like, there are other people out there that could also bring this to the surface. And you just pointed that out.
Yeah, on the other side, to defend Greer a little bit, he has dedicated his life to this stuff.
He has.
He's sacrificed a lot.
Yeah, he has. I'll give him that. And I don't know how much money surely he can be making. I mean, one of the arguments I've put forward in the past is that, you know, he charges a fortune for these CE5, you know, protocol things that he does to get people to go out and speak to aliens. But then he was like asking for help for, you know, paying for hard drives.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess it is the kind of thing that may, you know, trying to, you know, expose this would not have, you know, a steady income stream.
So have you got audio of this guy?
Yeah.
Is this the moment where he...
Well, I want to know. So him getting blown up is separate, right? It has nothing to... It's just why he has the brain injury. It's not associated apparently with the military-industrial complex or him whistleblowing. But what he does describe is that earlier on when he was at this weapons testing range one evening, he said that there are a couple of guys there, a couple of Raytheon guys there, right? And he said on this particular evening, the range was lit up, all the lights were red, and they had live fire going. And all this live fire was going. And he says all of a sudden it stops, like the live fire stops, and there's yelling going on from the men outside. And he rushes outside to find out what's going on. And he looks up into the sky and he says he sees what appears to be some type of craft, like it's some kind of, you know, weird, strange craft. And he looks to kind of the left of it, and there's this like seven lights in a V-shaped formation, kind of very Phoenix Lights, you know, in its presentation. And he says, out of one of these crafts, I don't know which one it was, but there was like a gimbal that was dropped down underneath. And this gimbal seemingly was projecting the other craft, suggesting that the other craft wasn't even there. He said, if I had a baseball, I would have thrown it at it because I wanted to know if it was actually there. It was a hologram. But there was one real craft that was projecting this craft onto the range. And he said no one fired or did anything because he heard over the radio something along the lines of, "Oh, that's one of our birds," and something along the lines of, "It doesn't need wind to get lift." And the two Raytheon guys, like he looks back at these two Raytheon guys that up until this point have been very jovial and friendly and these he says they were pissed. Like they were angry that he had seen this. Like he'd seen this and it's really bad. And he didn't think anything else of it apart from the fact that obviously this is a very strange thing to experience. And he didn't get debriefed, which is what you typically hear in these sorts of stories. You know, nothing happened. He wasn't threatened by the men in black. Nothing. Until about a week later. About a week later, 6 to 7 days, he got a pass, a weekend pass to leave. And he went with his wife to go and see a couple of movies. And they left halfway through the movie because he got a headache or felt tired or something and, you know, he wasn't interested in the movie. So he leaves. And as they're driving back, there's this one road that goes into the base. And as he's driving back, it's this stereotypical kind of UFO sighting where they're pursued by this bright white light. Like this bright white light starts chasing them. And as this light chases him, it kind of speeds ahead of their vehicle and then lands in front of them. Now, he thinks it's like a guy holding a spotlight or a floodlight. Like, he's just like, this is ridiculous. Like, he doesn't think there's anything paranormal about it. And he gets out and he puts, you know, steps past this light and he realizes it's not a guy with a flashlight or with a floodlight. It's a craft of some kind. And then things get extremely weird. Let me explain. We'll let him describe what happens.
I could see up into the sky above my car a mirage, which was like a silhouette or a heat foil on the road. And the stars shimmered in a straight line, and at a very long distance, there was a curve. So it looked, seemed to be curved. Either way, right when that ripple hit in the sky, the stars then refixed back into place. I realized I was looking at a cloaking device on a very, very, very large craft that seemed to encompass the whole desert area that I was under. At that moment in time, I then I glanced and panned my view just to try to get the, you know, fathom the dimensions of this craft. And I saw a giant white, bright white light floating in the sky. And it was a hangar bay door opened. And it looked like a window floating through the sky, maybe even a portal. People might from a distance think, hey, that's a portal. But I obviously knew it was a craft. So this is a hangar bay door. And there was a female silhouette standing there. All of a sudden, I began feeling a thud, thud, thud sound. This was a resonant frequency being pulsed through my body. As I felt this, it increased in speed, thud, 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 thud. It was very rapid. You can see the same type of thing in the movie Interstellar, very similar when he falls through the black hole. As this thud resonated my body, I felt my molecular or my cells, maybe the quantum level of my body, feel like it was being resonated. I felt like maybe I'm going to be microwaved. Or something to that nature. Either way, I seen some bands coming through. I began lifting up off the ground. My vehicle began lifting with me also. As this happened, instantaneously, I cued in and I was flat on my back and I was staring up at the ceiling and my vision cued into a very, very bright white light. My vision panned over and there was my wife flat on her back on a table. And this all happened in milliseconds, guys. This was, oh crap, what's happening. So this is a very short encounter here.
Well, so he was abducted?
He was transported, teleported from the ground. So it's not included in the audio because, and I had to cut that up because he did struggle to tell this story. But essentially he describes that when he saw this bright white light, there was also a craft that was sitting on the ground. And this craft, even though, well, I shouldn't say it was floating above the ground, but it was sturdy and it was rigid. And he went over to go and touch it, right? And as he goes to touch it, his wife is like, don't touch that. She jumps out of the car and starts to run. And as she runs, she's enveloped by the electromagnetic stasis weapon. She's enveloped by it. This is what was described, you know, in that earlier audio. And he's like, and some voice in his head says, oh, your wife is okay. And he kind of calms down. He's like, oh, okay, my wife is okay. Then the voice from this larger craft up the top. So it must be the same craft that he'd seen a week earlier. So there's two craft. And I don't know if the thing on the ground was like a distraction for him or a decoy of some kind, but he starts like playing with it. Like, and I shouldn't say playing with it, but he's touching it because he's intrigued by it. He says that it feels like onyx glass, but when you put your hand on one way, it feels extremely smooth. But he says, when you put your hand the other way, it feels like a shark skin or a cat's tongue, that kind of effect. And then it kind of has these, I don't know, like tiger stripe kind of colors that are coming through it. And it kind of opens up some little panel and this panel starts flashing all these different colors, which seemingly initiated this transport where he was transported up into the air. And at one point he's told, you weren't supposed to see that. And everything blanks out.
Told by whom?
A voice that's connected with his craft. So there's a massive cloaked craft, which the cloak is not working on its door. And then he says later on, once he's aboard this craft and he looks over and sees his wife, the last thing he sees is like where the hangar door of this craft, this massive craft was. This other little craft that had been on the ground was now docked in there. Mm. So what that is, I mean, who knows what this kind of stuff is, but this is a soldier who saw something that he wasn't supposed to see. The Raytheon, I mean, we're obviously inferring what's happening here, but the Raytheon contractors were pissed off because that thing wasn't supposed to be there. He wasn't supposed to see it. So they abducted him a week later. Now, obviously, it's had the counter effect to what they expected because he's gone to Stephen Greer and he's told his story. He's made this allegation that Raytheon knows exactly what's going on. But what's going on is actually the question. Like, we know that there's craft and they have advanced technology, but what they're doing with it is astonishingly insane.
It sounds to me like an alien abduction story,
yes,
of which we have thousands.
Thousands.
And he's gone to Stephen Greer, and Stephen Greer's said, oh, well, this fits my narrative quite nicely.
Yeah.
Like, this is not aliens. This is the bad, bad, evil humans that have done this.
Yeah.
And it just happens to pair with this Raytheon anecdote.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, yeah, he's connecting those two, but
this is the
are
thing.
They really connected?
Yeah, you're right. This is the thing that keeps on coming up with this, that I'm not a person that's black and white anymore, especially when it comes to this stuff. I think I say this, you have to find the gray. And to be sitting there or doing these presentations, and he's been doing it for 10 years as far as I know, Ben, there's no bad ETs. They're all good and humans are bad. And they're hiding this technology and we have to fight them. You know, we have to bring in new law. They can't even bring in laws to regulate cryptocurrency, for God's sake. You think they're going to bring in laws that are going to force these companies, these trillion-dollar companies, to release all the knowledge they have about this stuff? You think they're going to stuff up the oil industry, the energy industry?
Well, you can also use the same logic and argue, what you really think that this, what, a few hundred people who have these secrets have had the expertise to engineer what is technology that sounds like it's 1,000 years in the future?
Well, it's literally alien. It's alien to us.
Yeah, exactly. So you think this small group of people with no external outside help from minds, other intelligent minds, experts in materials, engineering, all sorts of sciences that are involved. I mean, just look at the automotive industry. Look at the advances in the automotive industry and the incremental gains over the last 70 years. And that's the entire world, the top minds getting the best jobs at the most advanced companies in Europe. And look at the gains they've made over 70 years. Yeah, you've got a nice smooth ride. You know, you've got great suspension. You know, the steering's nice, air conditioning. The cars are not flying into other dimensions, breaking the laws of physics.
No.
It just doesn't make sense. I'm more inclined to believe people like Grush, if he is telling the truth, and the other whistleblowers that came forward and spoke to
Lizzie Kane and Blumenthal.
No, the other guy I covered from Substack. Name escapes me now.
Oh,
Schellenberger.
Yep. Yeah, mm-hmm.
I'm more inclined to believe their take, which is, look, we don't think that we've been able to figure it out. We haven't been able to reverse engineer it. It is too advanced. It is too exotic. That makes more sense than this idea of Antarctic bases and, you know, a fleet of ships off planet. I love the idea, of course, sci-fi.
However,
it's so cool.
Yeah.
But it's just not reasonable. I just don't think it's a reasonable explanation for the phenomenon.
Look, he kind of addresses that in some way. And this is why I encourage you listening to go and watch this presentation. Even if you kind of skip through it, just have a look and, you know, judge for yourself. Obviously, this is just our opinion. But he kind of addresses that in a way it's possibly a little bit roundabout. But he says, look, the ARV, so these are the reproduction vehicles, as I pointed out a little bit earlier, that they're not entirely perfect. Like, they're pretty good. But for example, like when he's describing these electrostatic field emitters, these holographic emitters, teleportation, cloaking technologies, he says, if you're looking at an actual ET craft, it's seamless. Like it's perfection. There's, and I'm obviously just paraphrasing what he's describing here, but these things are obviously ET craft, like that highly advanced, what you'd expect technology. If it's one of ours, if it's still advanced and it still is beyond anything that we have in the aviation industry at the moment in the, you know, official world, it still has like weird pipes protruding from it and, you know, rivets and seams and all those sorts of things. So you can tell the difference, allegedly, between an actual ET craft and a reproduced craft. And he goes so far as to say that all the Tic Tac stuff, the reason it's not that it's extraterrestrial, they're ARVs. Like all that stuff, these pilots, you know, even though these pilots would have, you know, high-level security clearances, their security clearances aren't high enough. They don't know about these craft. They have no knowledge of it. So what they're seeing are like the audio from the Tic Tac stuff with the Nimitz, and you know, you hear one of the pilots going, oh my God, you know, the wind's moving at 140 miles an hour and this craft is just cutting through it, going in the opposite direction. Greer says that's because this is what the technology is. It's our technology. It's incredibly advanced. It's beyond anything that we have, but it's still ours. But why they're doing it near the military, I don't know. This is the strange thing. Why are they doing this? Like, if we have this technology, surely the technology would have sensors that would be so sophisticated that you would be able to know where operations are going on. So you wouldn't be flying around an aircraft carrier. Or, as has been highlighted in this audio, it has cloaking technology. We have cloaking technology. So why are they not cloaked as they're flying around these things?
Well, what's the point of having all this advanced technology and weapon systems and not using it? And you're still sending hundreds of millions of dollars to fight the war in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And yet you have a system that could end the war immediately. Yep. All you have to do is say, hey, Kremlin.
Yeah, look at what we've got.
We're going to flatten all your cities with earthquake weapons unless you stop the war.
Yep.
Why don't they do that? Why are they still spending hundreds of millions of dollars?
That's an excellent point.
It just doesn't make sense.
If they're so unethical that they would use fake billion-dollar greys to attempt to abduct someone to silence them, it's not beyond their capabilities of flattening a city just to prove a point. You know what I mean? You can't go, oh, well, they're completely ethical. They're not going to, you know, do that. Like, of course they would. If they had that technology, of course they would do it, unless there's some other agenda going on that I just simply don't know. I don't know what this is.
Well, that's what I want to know, is what is the other agenda? Because if you've got this situation where
very
there's
murky.
Basically an advanced breakaway civilization that's sprung up out of the military-industrial complex and these military contractors, what are they doing? What's their goals? What's their path? Like,
well,
what is the point of all this?
Totally,
if it's not, because it's obviously not for defense, what's it for?
Well, when you've also got Greer saying, and I've heard, you know, from years ago, he was working with, what was her name, Dr. Carol Rosen, you know, and she made allegations that Greys walked through the room and told them, you know, that, oh, no, we're definitely all good. And I go, okay, if you're all good, then just show yourselves. Just show yourselves. We could end war. We could end poverty. This is the whole point of what Greer is trying to say. Like, if we get this technology out there, all of humanity's ills will end. And these ETs are good? Come on. No, there's something else that's going
on. Still trying to find that slide with the sexy aliens. Was it like halfway through? Where is it? Like three quarters of the way through?
It's early on. It's nothing. It's not even good ET porn. It's just, you know, like a couple of sexy Nordics, essentially. I will see if I can find it and potentially put it. Oh, look, you're actually searching for it. Wow.
I live for these slides. Why do you think I show up to work every day?
The grey is actually better with his fiber optic innards ripped out. But look, you know, I wanted to point out that this isn't unheard of. You know, these sorts of experiences that people are having with the military, teleportation, cloaking, all this kind of stuff, it's been happening for decades. Like, if you go all the way back to 1977, you have the Welsh Year of Hell. And this relates to the Coombs family, right? You may recall this case, Ben, but I'll just highlight some of the details about how it aligns with what, you know, these whistleblowers from Greer, what they're talking about. So you've got Pauline and Billy Coombs. And they owned this little farm. They had a herd of dairy cows. I think it was about 100, maybe 150 cows. They lived on this clifftop area in southwest Wales. And everything was nice. They had five kids. And they were really kind of just your salt of the earth people. They just wanted to farm. And nothing unusual happened at their farm until January of 1977. Pauline looks out her window and she sees what is described as a fiery pendulum. And what I mean by that is that there's this fire just sitting in the distance and it's swinging back and forward and back and forward over this field right on this cliff's edge, right? And she's like, what the hell is that? And she looks closer and it looks like a fluorescent light with this big tail of flame shooting at the back of it. Now, she's completely transfixed by this, but then the light just kind of disappears and nothing else happens. But she then thinks that, oh, hang on a second. Maybe this thing has to crash. Like, maybe it was an aircraft that was on fire. So she goes rushing out there with her husband. And of course, they find nothing. You know, they find nothing. But what is odd is the following day, at that very location where they'd seen this light, or she had seen this light go down, there were unmarked army trucks. There were soldiers in camouflage uniforms. There was frogmen. There was about 50 of them. And they were all hanging around this coastal cliff where Pauline had seen this light. And Billy's like, what the hell are you doing? What's going on? They're like, oh, well, just we're part of the Royal Engineers and we're just repairing this walkway, this part of the walkway that's collapsed. Like, what walkway? What are you talking about? What are you repairing? Like, oh, you got to go now, you got to go. He's like, it's my land. And they threaten him, like, you have to get out of here. So he does. Like, obviously, he follows the orders of these military personnel. But it's weird. He's like, this is just really strange. What are they doing? Well, this event is called a gateway event, right? And we hear this a lot where people will see a UFO and it just lets a whole plethora of just strange, high strangeness into people's homes.
Isn't this where their cows teleported and went missing?
Yeah, this is exactly what happens. So they find that, you know, obviously the weirdness kind of starts up, but one of the events happens is that Billy rounds up his cows, these dairy cows, 100, 150 cows, brings them all in, starting to do their milking, whatever they were doing. He turns around and it's silent. And he realizes that the cows, all of them, have teleported into another field, or in the blink of an eye have moved into another field. Now, for them to be able to, he's like, this is impossible. It's impossible that they would have been capable of all running off, you know, not making a noise. Yeah. They were all fenced in. How the hell did this happen?
What's this case got to do with Stephen Greer?
My point is, this is about the military and the technologies that he was describing. So with his whistleblowers and the technologies that he was describing with the cloaking and the military being involved, this case was happening decades before Greer was even coming out. But what's strange and is potentially in support of Greer is that, yeah, this stuff has been happening for a long time. What they're describing, the military getting involved, wanting to find this stuff. Is this part of that group that is focusing on this? Are they testing something? Or, you know, are they trialing this on people? Is that what was happening on this particular farm? Or was it that something otherworldly was occurring and this is how they were trying to gain access to this technology? So a lot of the cases that I was describing are recent, or what Greer was describing are recent, right? We're talking about from the 2000s, 2010, like very recent reports. Has it only been about 30 or 40 years from cases like this that they've been able to extract, recover these technologies, reverse engineer them, and potentially these stories are true? This is what's happening. So with more of the disappearance, so right, you've got this disappearance, you've got cloaking going on, you've got strange craft being seen over the top of strange lights, strange aircraft, you know, but then you've got tall men and helmeted figures that are showing up as well. But what's different about this case, it suggests to me that, okay, maybe this is some type of PSYOP, maybe it's some type of weapons testing, because what's important about this particular site where this farm is, there are multitudes of military installations all around it. You've got a radar station not too far away. You've got a military base not too far on the other side. You've got deep underwater research programs. You know, all this kind of strange stuff in this one particular area. This family sees what seems to be a UFO and their cows start teleporting, or they start having electrical problems with their cars. So those static fields that were described as well, of those electrostatic fields, it seems like this is an early example of that, because one night Pauline, after she's seen a UFO, she starts driving home. She's got her kids in the back seat. There's only two of the kids. And I think one of the eldest kids starts yelling out. He's freaked out because there's this white ball of light, much like what was described by Stephen Digner, pursuing the vehicle. It's exactly the same thing, right? It pursues the vehicle. It comes down in front of them. She steps on the accelerator to get the hell out of there because she's worried it's going to crash into her car. It disables her car with some type of weird electrostatic field, like what was described by Digner. It's the same kind of thing. Now, there is a long history, though, of people's cars being disabled by these technologies, but maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's not extraterrestrial at all. It's some type of technology that we now possess that we can use.
I'm just looking at my notes from the Wealth Triangle Revisited back from February of 2018. This was by Paul Padgett, who discussed the Coombs Day case in great detail. Mm. I was looking at the end of my notes because he added an extra chapter in 2018. And, you know, he's adding on to all this research that you're talking about. He claims he discovered that there's obviously an alien underground facility that's accessed via the Stack Rocks Islands.
Yes!
But he also said a well-known former US head of state has a pig heart that was used by this technology to keep him alive. He was told answers to his school homework by a psychic magpie. I don't know why I have that in there. He would later hear this magpie's voice in his head during his college entrance exams. That's how he got put into a genius school and eventually recruited into espionage He found out that the magpie in his head was actually benevolent Pleiadians. He is also a Pleiadian.
Yeah.
This can't be Paget. This must be someone that he's talking about.
Yeah, I think that this farm, because I believe that the phenomenon is real. I think that these people, the Coombs, actually did have these experiences, because it wasn't just that. I mean, you're right with the Welsh Triangle. There was multitudes of other experiences in this area. It wasn't just this family. There were other people that were reporting seeing men in black.
There's naval bases there.
Exactly.
NATO bases.
Well, those stack rocks, right? One of the things that the Coombs claim is that at one particular point, one of these craft kind of appears over their farm and they run out to go look at the light. The light heads over to the stacked rocks and they look at the stacked rocks and they can see, like what was described again by Digna, right? Mm. There's this portal of hangar doors in the rocks. Like, it's in the rocks and the doors are open and there's an entity standing there, kind of just giving them, I don't know if it's a wave, but kind of just giving them a nod to let them know. Yeah. So it's exactly the same thing. But of course, there's no possibility. There's no physical way that that wall, that rock could, you know, have some type of door in it. And yet apparently it did.
This guy, this eyewitness claims the entities gave him designs and schematics to an oil scrubbing machine, which he sold to the United Nations, but they covered it up.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what repeats in these stories.
He ran a safe house for former spies who wanted to expose the truth. One guy was hired a hitman by the deep state who had killed 80 prominent people over the last few years.
Hillary?
Paul Paget knew this because the guy was writing his autobiography on his laptop and left it open. Oh, I'm going to go back to this segment. I'll see if I can find it. I'll put it in the show notes.
Look, whatever happened to the Coombs, it's just a great example of there being the military involved. And maybe not even the military, because it was unmarked. It was unmarked and they were experiencing all this high strangeness. And the technologies that were described and the experience described by Digna mirror exactly what happened to them decades beforehand. So I don't want it, while I am quite critical of Dr. Stephen Greer, I don't want to dismiss some of the stories that these people are coming forward with. So there's two possibilities, or there's a multitude, but in my mind, one could be is that these people are having these experiences. You know, these whistleblowers Digna had this experience, you know, and because it aligns with the story that's happened so far in the past, it's the same technologies. Like, these technologies have advanced and they're being utilized by these military-associated groups. Or did someone like Digna and the other whistleblowers just hear these stories, you know, from the Coombs farm, which were then, you know, taken by Greer and then fed to them and then regurgitated as these, you know, kind of rehashed stories? Is that what's going on?
Well, there's a lot of legend tripping going on. There's a lot of stories that get circulated around. We're guilty of that, obviously.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And those stories start to take a life of their own. They start to take on a life of their own. They start to create a culture of belief. This feeds into other people's ideas, mm-hmm. and sometimes even feeds into other people's experiences. What they perceive, what happens to them, is kind of a result, some might argue, of this, I guess, zeitgeist of...
It is zeitgeist, you're right.
Legendary mythology that gets created. Now, I'm not saying that the UFO phenomenon is all just myth and all created out of nonsense, but there is that aspect to it. You can't ignore that. I mean, these stories have this kind of really mystical nature to them.
Well, they're contagious as well.
Yeah, they're contagious. It crosses over into magic and myth and all that other good stuff. It crosses over into sigils and Aleister Crowley.
But I pointed out, like, the term is belief. It actually is belief. And the more people that have a belief in it, that seems to power this stuff as well, where it does start breaking out into more obvious, you know, experiences for people.
Well, I want to see people like Keane and Blumenthal, who seem to be really responsible in checking the credentials of these guys.
Yeah.
Do you know, making sure stories are fully checked out before they get published. I want to see these eyewitnesses face the same kind of scrutiny.
Absolutely. And you know what I wonder about these cases, though, as well, is that even with the presentation by Greer and these other whistleblowers, it still is very nuts and bolts. Like, it's still very nuts and bolts in
that good point.
It's describing technologies and, like, the consciousness aspect, even though Greer, you know, at other times focuses very much on the consciousness aspect. It seems like it's still, and is that why, you know, is that a conscious decision in this by Greer? Is he saying, you know, has he jumped on this opportunity to describe the nuts and bolts stuff because that's what brings people in? it's less, you know, prone to ridicule? Or is it that, you know, he doesn't want to describe the consciousness stuff because he's just not aware of it? Like, is he not, you know, that across it? I mean, the Coombs Farm thing, that's a good example, because as much as it was nuts and bolts and strange teleportations and cloaking technologies, there was also weird things like disembodied hands floating through the home. And in fact, I think it was Pauline, the daughter, had woken up one night to find this shadowy cloaked predator-style figure looming over the top of her. She yells and watches this thing run into her mother's room. And she goes and checks on her mother, and her mother is like, "What? You just had a bad dream, right?" But later on, Pauline wakes up in the morning with this horribly swollen and inflamed arm and puncture marks in her arm, right? And she's like, "How the hell did that happen?" And she speaks to her daughter, and her daughter was like, "Oh, last night I saw a floating gray hand move through the house and go into the room and then touch your arm." So there's these aspects that are like, it's high strangeness. It's not just nuts and bolts. There's like a weird kind of psychic element to
it. Well, what Stephen Greer does with his contact protocols is basically that.
It's all psychic.
It is psychic. It is like chaos magic. He's thrusting his will. He's summoning.
It's summoning.
It's like what the occult practitioners were doing in the 1800s and earlier. You know, there's nothing different. It just takes a different format with the whole, UFO framing. But we'll talk about that more in the Plus extension coming up, because I'm going to follow that thread. We're going to talk about this bizarre story that started to take on a life of its own, Ong's Hat, this internet conspiracy that appeared in the 90s. I'm going to tie this in with Art Bell's famous Coast to Coast program, how various callers and stories that emerged on that program seem to do the same thing, where a story would take root and then take on a life of its own and then start manifesting real tangible phenomena and affecting Art Bell's life, affecting other people that got involved. You know, with the story of Ong's Hat, as we'll hear in the Plus extension, people that started to research it, weird paranormal stuff started to happen in their lives. They would see shadow people.
It's sometimes,
you know, they would have weird psychic experiences. There's something about this kind of mythology, this kind of legend creation that makes things happen. It starts to look back on you, like we've always said about the paranormal. Once you start looking at it, it starts to look back.
Well, it's almost like it's supplied with energy, so it's then permitted to manifest.
Yeah. And by the way, I found the slide of these hot, hot aliens.
No one could see you, you know, doing the weird finger thing of inverted commas, okay? What? Why? They're not hot
enough
for you?
They're not hot.
They're not mole people?
No. They're like weird kind of, they don't even look male and female. Like, what is going on?
I can't believe you spent the show looking for that.
I finally found them, and they're 3 out of 10. They look like burn victims.
Wow.
Who have just had their skin smoothed. They don't have ears. They don't have any hair. Like, you take the hair off a woman, she immediately drops like 5 points. So this woman's barely a 2, this alien woman. This is not the sexy, hot Pleiadian slide I was promised. Although the image with the grey, with the wires coming out, is pretty cool.
Have you got that? I'll put that in the show notes.
Because he looks so sad. Like, he just looks so dejected. Like, oh, why did you kick my face off?
Yeah, because he's just cost $2 billion to manufacture.
I don't think you can put them in the show notes because
there was some copyrights on them, so I'll
Greer's put a big fat copyright notice on it.
Yeah, I'll just link to the video. Have you got the times there? We'll put the times in and you can go and find it.
But coming up after the break, we're going to look at all that weird stuff with Ong's Hat, legend tripping. I'm also going to be talking about some old AWOL Army intelligence officers and how that ties in as well. That's all coming up on our Plus extension. Head to mysteriousuniverse.org/plus. Sign up today. You get access to the big extensions we do on these shows every single Friday. And of course, Plus members get an exclusive show that comes out every single Tuesday as well. You're getting more than double the content. Plus members also get a higher quality audio version of the show. You get an HQ version for our audio. You also get a totally ad-free version of the show. And make sure you sign up for MU Max too, which gives you access to the massive back catalog where you can go back, for example, to season 19, episode 5, back in 2018, where we went into the Welsh Triangle and
psychic magpies.
The psychic magpies. That's a wrap for this free edition of MU. Thanks for listening. If you're on Plus, stick around for the great stuff after the break. For everyone else, we'll catch you next week.